Case number 24-1360 et al. Vermont Information Processing, Inc. Petitioner versus National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Ellis for the petitioner, Mr. Sauter for the response.
Morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I think I've reserved 2 minutes for rebuttal. I'm Steve Ellis. I represent Vermont Information Processing. We're appealing a decision of the National Labor Relations Board that was issued on November 5th of 2024. It relates to the termination by my client of four software developers. Mr. Bendel was terminated on February 16 of 2021. The other three, Mr. Dragoon, Mr. Swift, and Mr. Noble, were terminated 2 days later on February 18, 2021. I'd like to focus on two or three issues which potentially moot all of the other issues that have been raised in the briefs. And the first is the issue of uncharged conduct. The general counsel's complaint alleged that my client, VIP, fired all four of the charging parties because they, quote, engaged in concerted activities with each other and with other employees for the purposes of mutual aid and protection, by creating and disseminating a spreadsheet where employees could view and share salary information. But, Your Honors, neither the ALJ nor the board found that Mr. Dragoon, Swift, or Mr. Noble were fired for that reason. The ALJ found and the board affirmed that those three were fired for their chat communications on a VIP work platform after the spreadsheet had been created and disseminated. General counsel never moved to amend the complaint, either before, during, or after the ALJ hearing, to charge that these chat communications were concerted protected activity, or that firing those three for those chat communications violated the act. This theory appeared for the first time in the ALJ's decision itself, and that's at Joint Appendix 1739. VIP argued to the board that the ALJ's finding of a violation that was not charged or litigated violated VIP's due process rights. The board's decision doesn't address that argument at all, and this is a very fundamental constitutional problem. This court has repeatedly held we cannot affirm a decision made without a reasoned explanation. So without a reasoned explanation, it's impossible to determine whether the decision is supported by substantial evidence.
Isn't the standard that it is well settled that the board may find and remedy a violation even in the absence of a specified allegation in the complaint if the issue is closely connected to the subject matter of the complaint and has been fully litigated?
Well, that may.
And it seems to me that what the ALJ did, it was closely connected because it relied on the chat that was closely related to the spreadsheet and Bendel's firing, which allegedly was because of the spreadsheet. But I think what is a little bit more problematic for the board is that the NLRB cited workplace conditions. And I'm not clear on how that is something that was closely connected and fully litigated.
Well, I'd like to get to that in a moment, Your Honor. But the problem is, the board didn't address this constitutional due process argument at all. And this court has held that a board decision is arbitrary if it fails to consider an important aspect of the problem. And this is an important aspect of the problem that we raised in our briefs to the board, that this is a violation of due process.
But it's not a violation of due process, is it, if it's closely connected to the subject matter of the complaint and has been fully litigated?
But we don't know what the board decided on that issue because they didn't address it at all. So it's an unreasoned opinion. We don't know if there's a reasoned explanation for it or an unreasoned explanation. There's no explanation for the board's failure to address.
But wouldn't it be harmless error if there was no due process violation? It would be harmless error for the board to have not addressed why it was not a due process violation.
I don't think you can get there, Your Honor, because the board has to address this problem.
Adopted the ALJ's finding. Any that they didn't disagree with, they adopted in full the ALJ's findings, which means they adopted the ALJ reasoning that Judge Pan just referenced.
Well, they didn't
grapple with.
They didn't specifically adopt the
ALJ. They have to more specifically when they say we adopt everything that the ALJ said except, and then they have some footnotes. they adopted everything the ALJ said. So they did address it. They just addressed it in a way that they're entitled to address. District courts do it all the time with respect to magistrate judges.
Again, Your Honor.
And so that's the way they address it. We adopt what the ALJ said.
Again, Your Honor, this was a very important argument that was raised before the board, that this was a...
They answered it. It's not important, not important. They answered it. They said, we adopt the ALJ's findings. Your whole argument to me so far has been they didn't address it. In fact, they did address it when they adopted the ALJ's findings.
I don't believe that's a reasoned decision, Your Honor. And
if we're going to adopt, this is going to be like a thunderbolt decision. If we were to say... The board cannot address or respond to arguments by simply adopting the ALJ's decision on all arguments raised except the ones that it specifically disagrees with. Do you have any precedent for that?
They addressed some and they didn't.
All the time.
I understand, Your Honor, but this court has held repeatedly that if it's an important argument and the board fails to consider it, it can't be affirmed. It's arbitrary.
If they say we've looked at how the ALJ dealt with this and we adopt its findings, that is considering it.
I don't believe that's a reasoned decision, Your Honor, and on an issue of this importance. But let me get to the issue that Judge Pan raised. The board's decision found that not only were these individuals terminated, not for the reason that was charged, but for their participation in a chat that discussed workplace conditions without discussing what workplace conditions the board determined to be protected activity.
Isn't it obvious that the workplace condition at issue here that's tied up with the spreadsheet is the concern about getting underpaid?
Well, there wasn't a charge here that being concerned about being underpaid.
And that's what was so upsetting on the spreadsheet. And that's what they got upset about from Mr. Bendel, was the spreadsheet had that line about, you know, developers underpaid 100%.
But the charge, Your
that's
Honor.
That's a workplace condition, right?
The charge didn't charge that complaining about being underpaid is a protected activity.
It was the content. It was the content of the spreadsheet.
But we can't, Your Honor, we can't tell from the board's decision. The workplace conditions that were discussed in that chat were...
It says to Mr. Bendel's firing, J1053, Mr. Simard did not like that the spreadsheet conveyed the message to everybody that the programmers are all underpaid. That was his firing for the spreadsheet, because it conveyed the message that all programmers or developers are underpaid.
But, Your Honor, the board's decision doesn't say which comments in the chat about workplace conditions were considered to be protected activity.
All we need is one. And if they're definitely the whole rationale for firing Mr. Bendel, the whole rationale that they were discussing was this concern about underpayment, it becomes self-evident. We don't require, you know, jot and tittle like that.
But, Your Honor,
if there's one workplace condition that they were talking about.
They were talking about lots of workplace conditions.
One of them was concern about underpayments. And then Mr. Bendel got fired for the spreadsheet that included this line about underpayment.
But it wasn't complaining about underpayment that was the protected activity. It was salary sharing. It was the act of salary sharing that was the protected activity that was charged. Mr. Bendel had been complaining about being underpaid for months. That was not the protected activity.
We got Mr. Simard himself telling us that what he didn't like about the spreadsheet was that not that it was a spreadsheet of salaries, but that it conveyed the message to everybody that programmers are all underpaid. That was that's what led him for the charge for firing Mr. Bendel.
But the workplace conditions.
Is that a workplace condition?
It might be, but what's also workplace conditions is the discussions in the chat that actually were the reasons that were why these three individuals were terminated, where they were saying, we're all leaving. We're trying to take another talented developer with us as we're leaving. They're saying, purge your computers. Nobody's disagreeing with that.
Okay, the district court discredited as pretext the concern about purging computers.
And
I assume your company doesn't have a policy of firing people when they say, look what's happened, we're going to think about leaving.
That's not all that happened here, Your Honor. They said, we're leaving. We're trying to recruit another developer to go with us. They're talking about these are highly skilled computer software engineers. They have access to the company's most sensitive IT infrastructure and data. They're trying to roll out a new restructuring of the development teams, and they now have three developers who are saying, we're on our way out the door. We're trying to take another developer with us. They're talking about purging their computers. One of them says, I'm downloading this confidential VIP document onto my personal Google account.
I guess what I'm trying to understand here is the stuff about purging. The ALJ and board both discredited as pretext. So that's just not the basis for their firing. If it was pretext, it's pretext. Not the basis for the termination of those three employees. And there was plenty of testimony that Vermont Info did not discourage people from looking for jobs if they were unhappy.
Well, there's also plenty of testimony that Vermont Information Processing didn't discourage people from sharing salaries either. And right, the administrative
about the workplace condition of underpayment. That was the trigger.
But the administrative law judge's finding on pretext was basically just the ALJ disagreeing with VIP as to what level of risk should be tolerable.
I think that's not fair. That is not fair. They said there was no indication whatsoever that anyone checked to see if computers have been purged ever, that was not examined like you would if you thought somebody was purging computers. And the one person who said, purge your computers, boys, was Mr. Noble, whom everyone said was the hardest decision to make on termination. The other two didn't say it, didn't do anything. So they weren't purging anything. They weren't encouraging it. They didn't do anything. And their computers weren't examined. That is much more rationale than you're giving the ALJ and the board credit for.
Your Honor, the VIPs had software installed to monitor the systems perpetually. Some bugs that may be placed in the network, either intentionally or inadvertently, could be undetected for some time. The testimony was, we monitor these things constantly. The fact that we haven't discovered any problem right now doesn't mean there might not be a problem. And why should we be retaining software developers who need to be entrusted with this level of access to our IT infrastructure and data if they're telling us
the stuff that's been rejected evidentially as a basis for termination? Mr. Simard said as to these three, if you have one or two people poisoning the well and telling employees that they're underpaid, it starts to resonate further and undermine the happy culture he hoped to cultivate.
Yes, and if you have
reason for termination, that sounds like it's very interwoven with the spreadsheet and very much a protected activity.
Your Honor, but it's not the protected activity that was charged. And
someone says is charged with an unfair labor practice. Let's say they're charged with preventing people. And I don't want to do the salary thing because that, but talking about safety concerns on an assembly line, and they're discharged, and that's an unfair labor practice. And the company comes in and says, oh no, we discharged him because he was forming a union. Can the board then say, credit that and say, well, either way, it was an unfair labor practice?
Well, the company never said.
I'm not saying you said that here, to be clear. This is a hypothetical.
Right. No, I understand.
There's no evidence that was said here at all. But if you have a charge on one thing and then the defense evidence comes forward and shows, in fact, the termination was for a different unfair labor practice.
Well, that's important, Your Honor, because
I just want a legal answer to this question, not a factual one, because this is a hypothetical. Can the board credit the unfair labor practice evidence put on by the employer?
Well, hypothetically, I suppose the board could, but part of the problem here is we don't know what the board did here. And this brings us to another issue that was raised that was not addressed by the board.
Mr. Ellis, if you may, it seems to me, my understanding of your argument is that your client understood the ULP under consideration to be salary sharing.
Yes.
And putting together a salary sharing spreadsheet. And in defense, your client said, we didn't fire them because of the salary sharing. Look at this chat where they were saying all these disloyal other things that are we didn't like. We want to fire them because of stuff in the chat. And then the rug was pulled out from your defense when the board then said the chat that you relied on as your defense was the ULP, when it seemed to me that you were relying on the chat as a defense to the spreadsheet. Now, the aspects of the chat that were inextricably intertwined with the spreadsheet and salary sharing, I think, are covered by the case law that says it's not in the complaint, but if it's closely connected to the subject matter of the complaint, which was salary sharing and spreadsheet, and it's been litigated, that would be okay. That's kind of what the ALJ did. But this working conditions, workplace conditions thing kind of came out of the blue. And now they're relying on the chat talking about workplace conditions, and they don't even specify what workplace conditions they were talking about. And you didn't have an opportunity to address workplace conditions because you never knew that was an issue. When workplace conditions came into the picture at the NLRB stage, the hearing was over, the exceptions had been filed, all your arguments had been made, and then out of the blue, they're relying on workplace conditions, and you never had a chance to know what those were or what your arguments would have been against workplace conditions, ULPs. And I thought that was your argument.
Well, that is our argument, Your Honor. And you can't tell from the board's opinion what the workplace conditions were that the board found were being discussed in the chat that were protected. Is the board saying that it is a protected activity for developers to be talking about, we're all going to leave at the same time, we're going to recruit another developer to go with us, we're going to purge our computers, and we're sharing all of these discussions with a former employee who is now employed by a customer? Is that a protected activity because it's a discussion of workplace conditions? We can't tell from the board's decision because they didn't provide any reasoning around that decision.
So for the two, Dragoon and Swift, who never mentioned purging computers.
Well,
there's never.
They didn't object either.
Okay. All right. So now you want to say, is it unprotected activity to not object to another employee's statement?
Mr. Dragoon was a team lead. If a developer is saying, we're going to purge our VIP computers.
Not what he said. He said, it's pretty clear in contract that he was saying, get rid of what we were saying about the spreadsheet because Mr. Bendel just got fired for that. But, and that's how it was
understood.
And that's why it was all deemed pretext by the ALJ. And so I want to get back to the point. Is it your position that employers can lawfully fire employees for discussing with each other their unhappiness at work, their desire to leave work? Hey, you want to come with me? Either I know a good employer or we could, you know, they could bring someone with them for a lot of reasons, set up our own shop, or I got this great idea, this good company over here I heard is hiring. Is that permissible?
My client certainly thought it was. And
as a matter of law.
And as a matter of law, there's nothing that says it's not, and that's not what was charged in this case. In the absence...
Well, one thing that makes things an unfair labor practice is if employers aren't consistent in their treatments. And there was testimony that there was a program manager who said, we don't object to people talking about leaving, investigating options, because we don't want someone here if they're unhappy. And so if you're inconsistent in how you apply something like that, then it would be.
I don't think there's any evidence that there was any inconsistency in how this was applied. If you're trying to roll out a restructuring of the development teams, it requires everybody to be on board. And now you find out that three of your developers are not on board. And in fact, I have a foot out the door, intend to leave and are trying to take other people with them. and are discussing this with somebody who's employed by a customer and are talking about purging computers. And I'm sorry, Your Honor, developers, software developers talking about purging their employers' computers is unacceptable.
I think the purging computers point, there's kind of a factual finding by the ALJ that that was pretextual. But the taking another employee with you, can an employer fire an employee for trying to, I guess, poach another employee, or is that protected?
I don't see why that's protected. There's certainly no case law that says that that's protected. And again, that's not what's
not protected. And if that is a working condition that was the basis of this, I just think it's very unclear whether what the NLRB did was.
Well, that's exactly my point, Your Honor. It is very unclear. And the board also did not address the other issue, which we raised before the board, which is the act does not require an employer to allow employees unfettered use of the employee's IT resources to even to engage in protected activities, unless the employee.
That's a separate question. So on this, just to stay back on this charging issue, our precedent requires a showing of prejudice. And what you said in your brief is, well, we would have put on other evidence, or some of you said would have called other witnesses, but there's no specificity at all as to what you would have either not done or done.
Well, it's
what is your best case for a finding of prejudice being based simply on statements that we would have done things differently?
Well,
without specifying substantively what story you would have put on.
I think to begin with, Your Honor, if the charge had been that it was that these three developers were unlawfully terminated because of their participation in this group chat, mm-hmm. VIP would not have relied on the group chat as a defense to the charge. It would have put on an entirely different defense, and it would have zeroed in more on exactly and frankly, there is evidence.
What evidence would you have had of their disloyalty, their desire to recruit someone to go with them other than the chat?
We would have brought in the other employees that were parties to their earlier chats that were discovered after they were terminated. And this occurred weeks.
Well, you can't rely on stuff that you discover after they're terminated to prove the reason for termination.
We can absolutely
rely on what the people knew at the time they made the decision
to show their motive and what these individuals, how truly disloyal they were.
If that's not evidence that the decision maker had at the time of the decision, you can't rely upon it. There's no after acquired evidence theory here.
No, well, it doesn't have to be after acquired evidence. If we're trying to prove that these individuals, we're trying to extrapolate now from what we do know, which is we can see in this chat.
You say, what did the decision maker know at the time the decision was made? And that was all from the chat.
And we knew that they were disloyal. And if
from
the chat.
So, I'm really trying to understand for your prejudice showing here. If it seems to me the very thing that you want to rely on to demonstrate that you would have relied on to demonstrate a different reason for their termination is the very chat that you put into evidence.
Well, it's not a different reason. It's the very reason that management discussed and the reason the VIP has advanced all along why these individuals were terminated, because they were disloyal, because they couldn't be trusted.
You advanced it all along. You put your evidence on. I mean, that's your point. That this was our affirmative defense. It wasn't the spreadsheet.
But if
it was this disloyalty.
If we had known that the chat itself was going to be deemed a protected activity, and
incidentally, don't know if it's going to be deemed to be, that would be.
And the board specifically found that VIP monitoring and investigating this was not a violation in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
So we found information. We relied on that information to fire these individuals. If we would have known that this whole chat was going to be considered the protected activity, we would have gone into a lot more evidence about exactly how disloyal these people were. And
I think we're going to show prejudice. You have to show what evidence you would have put on for their termination that was before the decision maker at the time So it's, and we know the decision maker tells us exactly what he was relying on here, right? People poisoning the well. And you're talking about the restructuring. So this is a particular point in time of sensitivity. All right. So you've got that here and you put the chat in. So it seems to me that it's not that you want to put on more evidence. You want to have a board finding about this legal question of whether what they said in the chat was protected or not.
Well, that's certainly something that the board ought to decide.
That's a very different evidence. That's a very different argument. Your brief and your argument in your brief was we would have put on different evidence. But it seems to me the basis for the decision for termination is right here, Mr. Simard's words. And that was from the evidence from the chat.
Well,
and so your argument seems to be in response to Judge Pan, not that we would have put on new evidence, but that the board needed to make a new legal finding about whether that was protected or not.
It's both, Your Honor. It's both, Your Honor. If we had known that this chat itself was going to be considered the protected activity, and as Judge Pan has pointed out, we don't know exactly what about that the board is saying was the workplace conditions that was the protected activity. We don't know that. But had we known that, we would have not relied solely on, we didn't fire them for creating and disseminating a salary spreadsheet because there's no evidence that these three actually did that. What we fired them for was their participation in this chat where they made these comments.
Well, I agree with that. So that I'm
sorry.
I'm trying to understand.
Why isn't it the case that you wouldn't, if you had known that the chat was potentially a ULP, you would have parsed the chat more? Because what I'm confused about is which parts of this chat are allowed and which parts are not allowed. And, you know, what are they relying on? It just seems to me that it is unclear. It's not just the chat, because there's stuff within the chat that is protected and stuff that's not. And if you had known that this was part of the inquiry as to what was a ULP, wouldn't you have parsed the chat and figured out what was allowed, what was not allowed, and maybe crafted your defense in response to that? And also, I believe what happened was when you saw this chat, you also pulled up performance evaluations of each of these employees. And might you have relied more on performance evaluations now that in combination with the parts of the chat that were not protected? It just seems to me that if it was never on your radar screen that parts of this chat were going to be part of the ULP, you just would have done your defense differently.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Your Honor. We would have had a completely different defense.
I don't understand this. I'm still not getting this. You don't get to just parse up the chat's going to be turned over to them. They're going to have it. It's a really bad strategy. Everyone knows to just pick your favorite pieces and put something in, knowing that the other stuff's going to come in from the other side. So this chat was coming in and it was in. And the performance evaluations were not anything that Mr. Simard relied on in making the firing decision. We have that testimony. Right. And so I don't know why those would have been relevant. It seems to me your argument is not an evidentiary one. It is the one that Judge Pan was referencing, which is there's a lot of stuff going on in this chat.
Right. And
what was protected, what was not. And we want to point to the parts when Mr. Simard said that they're poisoning the well. And destroying the happy culture at the workplace. And I take that the I'm unhappy, want to leave is the poisoning. Well, there needed to be a legal ruling by the board.
Two things. Number one, Mr. Simard also testified that he was very disturbed when the statement by, I believe it was Mr. Swift in his performance review, was read at the manager's meeting where Mr. Swift said, I have no loyalty to VIP. In the context now of this chat, that was very concerning.
Was that right before this event, or when was the date?
That was in his last performance review.
How long before this event?
I don't know, months. But it was something that hadn't come to Mr. Simard's attention until they were focusing on these chats. But this is exactly the problem. You know, VIP is looking at...
Do you want a legal ruling from the board as to what was protected or not protected?
I think at a minimum, we need that, Your Honor. At a minimum, we need that.
Because couldn't you have focused your defense on the parts of the chat that are not protected, like trying to poach another employee, combined with the performance review, lack of loyalty? I mean, it just seems like you could have crafted something if you had known that parts of the chat were going to be ULPs. You could have figured out which ones were not protected and tried to emphasize those more.
We could have,
very unclear to me as a labor expert, what parts of that chat reflect protected activity, what parts were not protected, and what's a working condition in the context of this chat. I don't understand it.
And this is exactly the problem. And I'd like to leave the court with this. This is the problem that VIP was confronted with. We have employees who are engaged in unprotected activity that makes VIP feel a lack of confidence, a lack of trust in these developers with the access that they need to have to VIP's infrastructure. But these employees have also engaged in a protected activity of salary sharing, and VIP recognizes that. So what is VIP supposed to do? They did the only thing they could do. They fired these employees for the unprotected activity, and then they went to their workforce repeatedly and said, we do not have a policy against salary sharing. You are free to share salaries. That's not the problem here. The problem here with Mr. Bendel is the way he did it, publishing this unattributed spreadsheet.
I remember that from the record. I suspect that my colleagues do as well. Is there anything in the record about VIP firing people in the past for disloyalty or disparagement of management? And this is not a totally hostile question. It's just whatever. Answer it accurately. But
I think the testimony in the ALJ hearing was VIP had never seen anything like this before.
Well, okay. And as I understand it, on page 29 to 30 of your brief, you go through at least three different strategic tactical things you would have done differently if this conduct had been charged before it was too late. Am I right about that?
That's correct, Your Honor. And
can I now go to the totally different topic, Bendel? You say that he was fired not for the spreadsheet's inclusion of salaries, but he was fired because the spreadsheet was misleading and confusing, right?
And a little bit more, Your Honor. It was the timing of the whole thing. Mr. Bendel had his meeting with his supervisors the day before, where they talked to him about the restructuring and his role in the restructuring. And he had been given a free agent role because management was already concerned that he had a foot out the door and he might not be sticking around. He didn't respond well to that. He used a scatological term to refer to how those meetings went. They didn't go well. So he was already on thin ice. They didn't make any decision about what to do about that at that point, except go forward with the rollout of the restructuring and then decide based on his response to that, maybe we need to revisit Mr. Bendel. They have the meeting on the morning of the 16th to roll out the restructuring. Almost, immediately after this meeting, this spreadsheet appears and is brought to senior management by a supervisor who says one of his developers has come to him and says, what is this? He doesn't know what it is. The manager doesn't know what it is. They're wondering if it's a VIP initiative. Management goes into the system. They see that Mr. Bendel created this the day before. They can see that it's not clear. There's no attribution about where it's coming from. It's on a VIP active document on a VIP server. They don't know exactly how this has been shared, but they also can see that he has hard-coded it so that no matter what data gets put into the spreadsheet, it's going to produce this result that says 100% of developers are underpaid. They say Bendel is trying to disrupt the restructuring because he doesn't like it. He doesn't like the role that he was in. We're going to take down this spreadsheet while we investigate it. And again, the board didn't find that taking down the spreadsheet was an unfair labor practice. And we're going to fire Mr. Bendel. And then we're going to go to our workforce and we're going to tell them, look, salary sharing is not the problem. You can share your salaries. We assume that's what you're doing. It. The problem was what Mr. Bendel did with this document. That's not okay. And again, we briefed this issue.
Just because of that one statement that they're all underpaid, because he didn't make that statement. It was somebody else who added that.
No, Trevor, he did.
Trevor added that.
No, Mr. Bendel made that. At least, and the ALJ found that management reasonably believed that Mr. Bendel did that. That he's the one who had hard-coded it.
Is that the only problem with the?
No. That's not the only problem with it. The biggest problem with it was the timing of it. It was on a VIP document.
The timing. So no one was allowed to discuss salaries during the rollout.
To put out a spreadsheet.
No, I'm asking the question. You just said timing.
Of course, people can discuss salaries. People can discuss.
Including during this rollout or restructuring.
Absolutely, people can discuss salaries. So that's not the problem. That's not the problem was all of a sudden, instead of focusing on the rollout, developers are looking at this spreadsheet. They don't know if it's a management initiative. They don't know what it is. They're confused about it, which is why it came to the attention of VIP management. And then they can see that it's got inaccurate information on it. It's clear that this is Bendel's.
What's the inaccurate information?
Some of the salaries were inaccurate, and the way that that Bendel had programmed it so that no matter what data was put in, it would produce this statement that 100% of developers are underpaid.
Was it programmed or someone just typed? People were just typing information in. So someone just typed information. I mean, you look at it, it's not mathematically changing. It's someone just typed in that statement.
Bendel hard-coded it, so no matter what data was put in, it would produce that same result.
Can you explain that a little bit more? I mean, there's a screenshot of the spreadsheet in the record, but, you know, it's a screenshot, and as you know, with spreadsheets, each cell may well have a formula that leads to what you see on the screen. You don't always see the formula. What was the hard-coded formula in the spreadsheet that caused it to always show that 100% of developers were underpaid?
I'm not a coder myself. I can't provide the technical explanation for that, but what I can tell you is there's undisputed evidence on the record that management went into this spreadsheet and they could see that Mr. Bendel is the one who had hard-coded this, so no matter what data went in, it would produce the same result. That's what management saw.
You lost me almost at the beginning, so you're not a coder yourself. I mean, I'm not a coder either. I can barely turn on my computer. I'm definitely not like Java coding some software program, but I know that with a spreadsheet, you can put in like cell one plus cell two. And if that's the formula for cell three, then if cell one's one and cell two is two, cell three is going to say three.
And you can put in a formula, so no matter what goes in, 2 + 5 is going to be 6.
Exactly.
So that
was the formula.
I don't know what the formula was, but that was the conclusion of management, is that that is effectively what Mr. Bendel had done. And by the way, there's other evidence too that contemporaneously with this coming on, there was another developer who was complaining that she was trying to put her salary in this spreadsheet and Bendel kept messing around with the formula. So this is what's going on while people are.
Did management know that before they fired Bendel?
They knew that. No, they found that out as part of the later investigation.
I'm gonna go back to this because it matters to me. I get that I hear you saying it shouldn't matter to me and it doesn't matter to you, but it matters to me. If the bottom of the spreadsheet had just had a cell that said, hey, everybody, in my opinion, we're all underpaid, that I think would not be especially confusing or inaccurate because it's an opinion. An opinion can't be inaccurate.
Agreed.
And it wouldn't be confusing. It's actually not at all a subtle point that that person would be making. Okay. But if, on the other hand, that cell is something that a viewer of the spreadsheet thinks, okay, this is the product of a mathematical formula based on whether the salaries that are entered are high or low, then I think it's pretty confusing. They think that cell is could possibly say something other than 100% are underpaid. So you haven't given me anything to help me think that it's the second of those scenarios and not basically just a bumper sticker that says we're all underpaid. Can you give me anything?
I can tell you that management, and these are people who know all about you know, entering data in spreadsheets and how to make spreadsheets. Their conclusion was that what Bandel had done was the second scenario, was that he had created.
What was he comparing it to? What, I mean, you can't have a statement. You couldn't have a mathematical formula computing underpaid status unless you're comparing it to other salaries. Was there any input anywhere in this document that showed what other developers and other places are getting paid?
Well, that's part of the problem.
No. This is a yes or no question. Was there anything in this spreadsheet that would allow a computer to then make a computation, but always have this one number come out, to compare these salaries?
No, Your Honor.
Absolutely not. So there was just typed in. It was a bumper sticker.
Well, but part of the
you can't decide other underpaid unless you have a comparison.
If I can answer your question, Your Honor, there was absolutely nothing in this spreadsheet that said underpaid as compared to what. You're absolutely right. But it also wasn't.
There's nothing to compute.
But it also wasn't. This is Chris Bandel voicing my opinion that 100% of developers are underpaid. It had no attribution. It wasn't clear where this was coming from, what its purpose was, and developers now are entering their confidential salary information on this spreadsheet.
It seems to me that even if you had a colorable argument as to why what your client did was justified, that doesn't mean that there wasn't substantial evidence to support the ALJ's determination and credibility, which relied on credibility and evidence in the record, that that's not really what was going on here, that Bandel was dismissed because of the spreadsheet and all this other stuff that you are saying. The ALJ found it was pretextual or not really what happened. And there's substantial evidence to support that based on the timing of his firing, etc. So even if you do have a colorable argument here, that's not the analysis before us. We just have to determine if there's substantial evidence for the ALJ's contrary finding that that's really not what happened. everything you're saying is pretextual. And what really happened was you were unhappy that he created the spreadsheet, disseminated the spreadsheet, you fired him for it. And all this other stuff is actually not the real reason.
Thank you, Your Honor. And this is where you have, with respect to Mr. Bandel, this is where you have to look at what the ALJ actually found and what the board actually found. There's VIP has never disputed that they fired Mr. Bandel because he put up this spreadsheet. That's exactly what he did that led to his termination. What they have disputed all along is that the termination was motivated by any kind of a retaliatory animus towards salary sharing. And this is the important distinction. And I think it's a distinction that the board made when they said we are not adopting the ALJ's finding that merely taking down the spreadsheet is evidence of retaliatory animus. So they're not relying on that. So where is the evidence that VIP was motivated by retaliatory animus towards?
Does it have to be retaliatory animus for those reasons? I mean, just firing somebody for doing a salary sharing spreadsheet, that's protected conduct. The spreadsheet was salary sharing.
The spreadsheet was a spreadsheet. Salary sharing is salary sharing. VIP could legitimately.
The spreadsheet was a form of salary sharing. Everybody put your salaries in the spreadsheet.
Right.
They're sharing their salaries.
And part of the problem with that.
And firing somebody for that spreadsheet is a ULP. And I guess under Rightline, you could say we would have fired him anyway for these other reasons, but the ALJ said those other reasons are pretextual and we don't credit it.
Well, this is why we need to get to what the other reasons were.
I think that's a different. So the chat is really not about Bandel. It's about the trio.
Right.
And that's different.
That's different.
But Bandel, I think, is very straightforward. It's ALJ says you fired this guy because of salary sharing. And you admit that it was salary sharing. So under Rightline step two, you have to say we would have fired him even if he hadn't done the salary sharing. And the record's very thin on why you would have done that, because you had not done so even after he had these problematic interactions with his supervisors. You hadn't fired him.
If this spreadsheet had had nothing to do with salary sharing, but had been, you know, sports betting or something else that's not protected, it would have been the same thing because he was disrupting the restructuring with this spreadsheet.
I understand, but the ALJ discredited you. That's what you say. But the ALJ said it was because it was salary sharing.
But the ALJ relied on taking down the spreadsheet, which the board said is not evidence of retaliatory animus. The only other, the board didn't say what other evidence of retaliatory animus the board found. What the ALJ said is shifting explanations.
I thought it was your burden under right line step two to say that you would have fired him anyway, even though you did fire him in part because of salary sharing. I thought right line says you're supposed to now prove, despite that, we were going to fire him anyway. And the ALJ said, no, you weren't. Yeah, and it's supported by substantial
evidence. Yes, but to make a prima facie case, the board initially has to prove that it was motivated by retaliatory animus.
Well, you conceded that it was because of the spreadsheet, which
But not because of salary sharing. And this is the,
I think you have more on this? No, I think we have one more question over here.
You said a few minutes ago that the management at the company understood the 100% underpaid cell to be the product of a coded formula. Where can I find in the record that that's what management?
It's cited. I don't have that cite in front of me, but it certainly is cited in our briefs in the statement of facts. It would be in Respondents Exhibit.
I'll save you time, or you save me the time. Can you tell me?
Respondents Exhibit 40.
On rebuttal, you can bring that
in. On rebuttal, can you just tell me the JA page?
I'll do that. I'll do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Sauter?
Hello, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Rick Sauter for the NLRB. So this is about as straightforward and as classic board case as you're likely to encounter. This case involves four employees.
I saw that in your brief. I mean, you've already heard two judges who don't.
Did I say that?
Sorry. You said in your brief this is like the most straightforward NLRB case ever. We could decide this in our sleep.
Okay.
But we've already heard two of us express some pretty serious skepticism.
Okay.
Okay. Would you like to address the charging issue?
Sure.
Unless my colleagues prefer something different.
Maybe the simplest way to do it is there was the issue, as you noted, of Bendel and the issue of the trio. I didn't hear the court.
Thanks to the trio, I think.
Can we talk about the chat? Can you tell us in that chat what was protected, what was not, and what was a working condition?
So, Your Honor, the board found that what the employees were fired for, what the trio was fired for, was discussing salaries, working conditions, and discussing Bendel's firing.
What are the working conditions in that chat?
In that chat, I mean, frankly, I think it's the salaries issue. I think the board probably repeated itself in that sense.
I think it's the salary issue. Can you first get the JA, pull up the chat, and say what exactly was protected and what exactly was not protected?
Okay.
Wait. Unless you have a photographic memory, I think you're going to need the JA for this.
No, I can actually. There are different parts of the chat. Like, for example, you talking about quitting, talking about job hunting. That's not protected.
I want to follow you along word for word. What page of the JA am I supposed to be looking for?
Okay, so this is in the SJA. Oh, no, I'm sorry. My bad. I have it in SJ, but I have the J numbers.
I've got so, A1111 spreadsheet.
Right.
You guys are starting?
I had 1249. Oh, okay. Maybe 1111 might be a better one.
It might not be. Okay. What page do you want to start on?
It starts on 1158, the chat, and it continues through 1201.
So you're starting at 1158?
Yes.
The chat starts long before that.
The chat starts, it's exhibit 14. It starts with, why is Caleb not lead of WMS?
What's all the stuff before it that also looks like chat?
Is that not a relevant chat? Is that a different chat?
Let me look.
Looks like there's a different chat. That's Exhibit 10 that starts at 11:32.
Right. So 11:56, 57, that's a different chat. That's Exhibit. I'm not sure if it's Exhibit. I think it may be Exhibit 12, actually.
And then even the one that you said starts at 11:58, I could be wrong, but it looks like that chat in the two line includes Bendel and a lot of Bendel statements in the chat. But I thought the chat that they were fired for was the chat that happened after Bendel was.
No, Your Honor. Bendel was fired in the course of the chat. The chat that they were fired about.
Bendel is literally chatting with
them. Bendel was chatting with them.
He finds out he's fired.
Yeah, Bendel. Well, he disappears. The others find out. At some point in that chat, one of them says, "Oh my God, Bendel's account has been locked out. What's happening?" And the others go, "What the hell?"
Okay.
And then later on, they say, "It's official. Bendel's been fired." And that's where you have the purge your computers comment. So all of this happens. This what happens is the spreadsheet, Bendel and Noble have their conversation about the spreadsheet on one day. I think it's the 16th.
And what page is the purger? Because again, I originally had 1249. That includes
the purge
your computers, but there may be a better chat that you're describing, a more relevant chat. They also say
purge. The purger computers is at 11:97.
It's also at 12:49.
Yeah, that's an affidavit from somebody from the beginning.
Okay. So this is this thing on 11:97. By this point, Bendel is gone from the chat.
Yeah, if you read actually the page before, at the very top, Dragoon says he was actually fired.
Okay. And then this is the chat that these other three were fired for.
Yes.
Okay. And then going to Judge Pan's question, and thanks for helping me get on the right page.
Sure.
I may have been looking at a copy of the page. What's the protected activity? What's the unprotected activity?
Right.
Which page are we on?
Oh, well, just one point to start. I've heard Mr. Ellis in the court say the chat was protected. No, there are statements in the chat that are unprotected.
That's what we're asking.
But you never said the
whole thing was protected. We're saying
Mr. Ellis certainly said that if we had known that the chat was the ULP.
Our question to you is what parts of the chat are protected and which parts of the chat are not?
The parts about salary sharing, about where they discuss salaries, where they discuss the spreadsheets, and where they discuss Bendel's termination. That's what the board found. They were fired for discussing their salaries, spreadsheet, and Bendel's termination.
Is protected conduct? Is generally discussing somebody else's termination protected conduct?
No, but discussing somebody's termination for engaging in protected conduct certainly is. And conduct that you have engaged in yourself because you participate in the creation or dissemination of that spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so going to page 1196, the third line from the bottom says, Jesus F in blank, is that protected activity? Can you fire someone for saying that?
You certainly can, Your Honor.
Okay.
But then when it's intrinsically linked and part of an entire discussion of salaries and of a guy being fired for protected conduct, this is what VIP tries to do. They basically try to sort of gerrymander in and out the sentences that may not be protected, that are not protected, like job hunting, that's not protected.
If we could just stick with our questions.
But is
the chat portion that says, let's take Fung with us, that's a really good programmer, let's all quit and let's take him with, is that protected?
No, on its own, it's not. But in the context, when they are talking about Fung doesn't get paid enough, he should come with us, and all of that, then you have the board recognizes, and I think this court.
What are working conditions? like in this discussion of all these different things, what's a working condition within this chat?
I think, like I said, that the salaries and the fact that one of their colleagues just got fired for engaging in protected activity, which they know is illegal, and that they are now afraid that they might get fired for the same reason.
But you're just inferring that. I mean, I guess the issue is when the NLRB issues its opinion, all of a sudden it's injected working conditions into the discussion, where I think the position of your friend is, we never knew working conditions was a ULP we had to contend with. And you're saying, I assume that the working conditions are the same ones as the salary, but how do we know that? Because there's pretty extensive chat now that I'm looking at it. It's very many pages. And there are things, I don't know if it's the same chat or other one, there are things you're like F management, like all these different things. And I just don't know what these people, what the NLRB held was appropriate or not. Once you inject working conditions, that there's never been any discussion of working conditions in the entire record, I don't understand where we are.
When the board adopts the LJ's finding and says they're talking about salary, about, you know, salary sharing,
working conditions. ALJ didn't rely on working conditions.
Well, working conditions is whatever the ALJ discussed, right? Whatever's in there. And
so anything that ALJ discusses in any NLRB case is working conditions? Because the ALJ didn't rely on working conditions.
The ALJ relied on people complaining about being underpaid, which is undeniably a working condition, right? And
it is a working condition, but right. I don't know if there are other working conditions in the chat that could form the basis of the NLRB's finding, because there's never been any discussion of working conditions. So I just don't know where that comes from or what it's referring to.
The only working condition that the ALJ discusses is the fact that they're underpaid and the fact that they're upset and they feel like they're going to get fired themselves for engaging in protected conduct. If the board says working conditions, it says that based on things that the ALJ found, it's not inventing a new working condition.
So the NLRB said, the board said that they were chatting about, I'm just paraphrasing here, I think it was salaries and then working conditions and Bendel's firing.
Right.
And that was the protected activity.
Right.
But if VIP never knew that working conditions was a part of the analysis, how is that not arbitrary and capricious to inject it after the record has closed, they've already filed their exceptions, and all of a sudden you're relying on something they never had a chance to address?
But the only working conditions, the only working conditions discussed by the ALJ are the fact that they're unhappy with their salaries. The board didn't say other statements.
Well, shouldn't the board have to spell out what working conditions they're relying on? Because the ALJ didn't rely on them, and there's never been any discussion of working conditions before in this record.
Working conditions is an extremely wide term, Your Honor.
Exactly.
I think when the board says working conditions, it relies on what's in the ALJ's opinion that relates to working conditions, namely the fact they are underpaid. So
I guess the thing that troubles me about this record is it seems to me that the general counsel said the ULP that we are going to be talking about is salary sharing and the creation of a spreadsheet and the dissemination of a spreadsheet. The ALJ did take that a little bit further, but I think probably permissibly when it said chats about the spreadsheet. That's inextricably linked. It's been litigated. That's a ULP. And I think the position of VIP is you told us it was about the spreadsheet. So our defense was, look at this chat. Look at all these things they were saying. And all of a sudden, you pull the rug out from under us by saying our defense, which was in this chat, was the ULP. And then you don't even tell us what it was in this chat that you're actually relying on, because there are parts of it that could be, as the ALJ said, inextricably intertwined, but other parts that are not. And it would be unfair for you to rely on the things that are not inextricably intertwined. And we didn't have any opportunity, if you did rely on the things that are not intertwined, to address them. But we don't know what you relied on, because all you said was working conditions. I, I mean, that sounds pretty compelling to me.
Well, okay. I think even, okay, well, I'll get back to your question, but I just want to make one point. Even if, let's say, the workplace conditions was, you know, a problem, I would argue that it's still harmless error because the boards still found, based on their chats about their salaries and being underpaid and Bendel's termination, that those were the unfair, that was the protected conduct within the spreadsheet. So even if,
we were discussing that.
UAVIP had the chance to defend against that.
But could they have sort of rejiggered or changed the way they defended this case if they had known that working conditions were a part of it? Because then they might have tried to ascertain within the chat what's protected, what's not, what's a working condition, and then they could have shifted their defense to address the board's or the ALJ's concerns. If the concern was about working conditions, didn't they have a right to know what the concern was and what the working conditions were so they could address them or change their defense strategy? Because then they could parse this chat and say, which ones are the ones you're concerned about? We're actually relying, it seems that nobody's disputing that it would be a firing offense that's not protected to try to poach another developer and have them leave the company with you. They could have said, we were really the most concerned about that, you know, right. and combined with the performance review. Like, they just could have reemphasized or changed, you know, the way they approached this if they had known that your concern was working conditions. And then they would have tried to figure out what the working conditions were that you were concerned about, and they could have adjusted their defense accordingly.
Every point you just made, Your Honor, is a point that they made in their argument and is evidence that they put forth. So I think that goes back to the...
But if the ALJ had credited them, if they had changed their defense a bit and said, we're the most concerned about the poaching of other developers, like, this is something that is really not acceptable to us. You know, we can't have people within our organization telling other people in our organization to quit. That was the most troubling thing to us. And if the ALJ credited that, that would be a permissible firing. It would not be a UOP.
Actually, Your Honor, this is where I would push back. If you make comments that are within a discussion, a protected discussion, and you make comments that, you know, fall out of there, your discussion does not lose its protection. The whole thing.
Oh, I thought you would agree that's not protected conduct.
No, I agree on its in isolation. If VIP comes across a chat and it's these guys saying, hey, we're going to quit and we're going to get this guy to quit with us. Let's all quit together. Unprotected, no doubt. If they say, we're not getting paid enough, this is ridiculous. Hey, he's not getting paid either. We should all leave together. And by the way, we're circling the spreadsheet, all of that. Then it's inextricably linked, and you can't just separate one from the other.
So these three employees could have said anything.
No. There are things that you can say that are so egregious that they will cause you to lose the protections of the act.
What's an example?
Off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you. It's under
management.
No. It's under the board's Atlantic Steel analysis. Things that are too serious that they will cause you to lose. Like, for example, this isn't saying something, but if you start if you're talking to your employer and you're arguing back and forth, and all of a sudden you hit the employer, you lose the protection of the act. Doesn't matter what you said before.
What if you use hate speech toward the employer?
Or you use hate speech toward the employer.
What if you say toward the employers, F these pieces of blank so hard?
If you say it to their face, maybe, but not in a when you're talking amongst yourselves. That's all.
Really, I'm just curious about this. Because if I'm an employer and I think that everything's going fine with this employee, mm-hmm. and then I find out that they're saying F.
Which is a direct.
This manager, so hard. And I'm disturbed by this and I want to fire them. I can't.
Yes, you can, if that's all they said. But if it's in the middle of a discussion, what the board recognizes, and I think this court knows, is you don't, when you're talking about protected conduct, that doesn't mean that you don't inject things, you know, conversation doesn't work like that. You don't just say, okay, now we're just talking about protected conduct and we're not going to say anything else. And now we're done. Now I'm going to say F this employer
so hard. Can you fire someone for disloyalty?
Not if you associate disloyalty complaining about your salaries.
Right. But so if someone is advocating for, let's say they've got a sign that says unionize,
yeah,
independent of whether or not they are in favor of a union, you come to the conclusion they are a disloyal employee, not disloyal because they want to unionize, but disloyal because they say things like F these pieces of F so hard. I don't see how you get to like a get out of jail free card for saying extremely disloyal and vile things about your employer just because a minute before you were saying unionize or pay us more.
That's a slightly, I don't know how the board would rule in that situation, because you're talking about one act where on one hand, this guy is doing this, and then maybe the next day he says, fuck these people so hard, excuse me. In this case, it's all intertwined. It's all part of the same ebb and flow of a conversation.
There's a lot of case law out there that says the board doesn't enforce Emily Post rules. There can be a lot of unpleasant language in workplaces. A lot has been tolerated. Picket lines, workplaces, break rooms. And so it's a very, very nuanced analysis before someone can get fired for using obscene language. It's really very nuanced and context specific. And there is a lot of precedent on that. So we can't just sort of pick up a transcript and say, oh, curse word, my ears hurt, you can be fired. That's your point?
I wish I was as articulate as you are, Judge. But okay, yes, that is my point.
That both Judge Millett is very eloquent, and also that what Judge Millett suggested is correct, that when you are engaging in protected speech, you can use four-letter words. But that doesn't answer the question of whether this is itself protected speech, or if this is a sign of disloyalty separate from wanting higher salaries.
When you are in the midst of protected activity and you interject other things like that, those become protected by association. You can't just carve them out. Why are they saying F these people? So why are they saying?
Talk over me.
Sorry.
Is this just a finding by the ALJ whether or not it's protected or not, depending on the context? Is it just for the ALJ to make a finding as to whether or not it's protected or not, depending on the context?
Well, I mean,
we're debating it in a vacuum here.
Right.
It's context specific. Sometimes it's protected, sometimes it's not, depending on the context. Isn't it for the ALJ to make a finding as to whether or not this is protected or not based on the context?
No, Your Honor. I mean, yes, there's ALJ could certainly make the finding.
My point is, let's take Fung with us. We're all going to quit. Let's take Fung with us. Isn't it up to the ALJ to determine whether or not that's protected or not based on the context?
I think if it would be nice, I'll agree. It would be nice if the ALJ had done so.
That's not what I'm saying, whether it's nice or not. What I'm saying is if they had had an opportunity to know what the concerns were within the chat, they could have homed in on, for example, let's take Fung with us, and said, that's not protected, and that's why we fired them. And then the ALJ could then decide that was protected or that wasn't protected or whatever, but that none of that happened because they didn't have the opportunity to know what was it within this chat that was allegedly a ULP or not, because that wasn't the focus of the complaint or even the ALJ's finding, which extended the complaint a little bit, probably permissibly, but then the NLRB went even further in an area that they didn't have a chance to address, which is working conditions.
Even if that was true and the ALJ should have made that finding, ultimately it is harmless error, because Judge Millett said,
how is it harmless if the ALJ didn't have a chance to address the argument, for example, that this is the thing that we relied on, let's take Fung with us? ALJ, it's not harmless if the ALJ never was presented the argument because they didn't know that they were going to have to parse the chat like that.
It is harmless, Your Honor, because under board law, when you interject things like that within the context of protected conduct, you do not lose the protections of the act. You remain protected.
I thought we agreed that the ALJ would have to decide what is protected and what is not, depending on the context.
Well, no, I'm sorry. That's not what I meant. What I meant is the harmless error in this case would be, as you're saying, the ALJ didn't have an occasion to pass on it. Therefore, that's what they're complaining about. The harmless error intervenes because even if the ALJ had passed on it under board law, it is undeniable and well established that you can say if these pieces of S so hard
I'm sorry, counsel. You got up. I said, is that protected or not? And you said that is not protected.
In
you
a vacuum,
can't say,
yeah.
Let's take Fung with us. Let's have Fung quit. I thought that's where we started. And now you're saying as a matter of law, that would be protected.
What I said, Your Honor, is that in a vacuum, making those comments, if they had found a chat that said just that,
question to you was
that
not
is not protected.
When I asked you this earlier in this argument about this case, I asked you, is that statement protected or not? And you said it is not. And now you're saying it most definitely is.
In this case, the statement is protected by association because it occurs within the context of protected conduct.
I understand that. I'm just saying you've changed your position in the time that you've been standing here.
I do apologize, Your Honor. I do remember saying in a vacuum, maybe we misunderstood each other. I sincerely apologize. But I don't believe I've changed my position. It's certainly our position in the brief is that even if statements like that on their own are unprotected, when they are made in the midst of protected conduct, they acquire or certainly they do not cause the employees to lose the protections of the act. And I apologize if I said anything differently.
In the context, imagine there's a union election. There's two competing planks. There are the incumbents, and then there are kind of challengers who say the union is doing a terrible job. Mm-hmm. And they're in a break room, the employees are, and their one plank is arguing that the incumbents are doing a bad job, and the incumbents are saying, no, we're doing a great job. And in the midst of that kind of hustle bustle and debate about the election, one of them says, some people here are not paying their bills. And as it happens, someone on the other side had husband recently passed away, and they'd been forced to raise money for the funeral expenses. And then that same person said that nasty thing also said, some people need to focus on their kids rather than the union. And a few days later, the incumbent person's son had narrowly survived a stabbing. These things are right in the middle of the election speech, back and forth, back and forth. This is from a case.
I know that case. I argued it in front of you.
Okay, then why was it unprotected speech? Why was it unprotected speech there? But you're saying in context of this chat, they could have said basically anything.
In that case, Your Honor, if you recall, the person who made those statements, what the board found was that he started by talking about electioneering. And then he veered off onto something that had absolutely nothing to do, and then got into a back and forth specifically with this person where he said those things.
They're talking about Bendel, and Bendel shouldn't have been fired. And then they veer off into, hey, let's go poach one of this company's employees when we leave. And also let's poach one of the employees' customers.
No.
Right?
No, that wasn't the same thing? No, they never said poach the employee's customer. They talked about calling up a former colleague of theirs who works now for a customer, a VIP, and telling him about what happened. There was no poaching of customers or anything like that.
It still seems off, a bit disloyal. It basically sabotaged the company's relationship with an employee, with a customer. But I think
we have
your answer to the McClam thing, but it seems like the argument that the board made there is not consistent with the argument the board made here.
In McClam, the argument in McClam is not consistent
with the argument here. And
with this one here.
And I think, imagine that someone said, those managers should pay us more. Mm-hmm. That's protected.
Right.
Imagine they said, those insert racial epithet should pay us more, and then the employer fired them for being racist. I think that's a fair firing, right?
Right. Right. But if they say those MFing employers should pay us more, that is protected.
If they say, we're underpaid, this is crazy what's going on, Bendel fired, my friend Joe over here, he's really underpaid too. Can you believe how underpaid he is? Wow. And they go, wow. Well, if we get out of here and get other jobs, let's bring him with us.
Yeah, protected by association. It's all about the reason, the spark about this, the reason they're talking about this is that they're frustrated with their pay. The reason they're saying F these MFers so hard is because they just fired a colleague for engaging in protected conduct. The reason they're saying, I don't care about these people anymore, is because they're complaining about their income and they feel mistreated.
At some point, it becomes a little attenuated, though, because the original ULP is salary sharing, disseminating a spreadsheet. And then it kind of leads into, we're all underpaid, which I can kind of see. But then it leads into, and let's take other people with us if we quit. At some point, it's a little attenuated from the original ULP.
I can understand how, yes, at some point there's going to be a line, but if it occurs within the same, this is the main point here.
It was fairly litigated, right? There's actually a legal standard for that. Like that if it's inextricably intertwined and fairly litigated.
Right.
But
closely connected and
poaching another employee was part of this. Like, I don't see why you can rely on that if you didn't say so. And I don't know whether you relied on it or not, because you didn't say so.
What the board relied on, and it said so, is the fact that they were complaining about their salaries and the working conditions.
Exactly.
And
working conditions. What does that entail?
Poaching an employee is not a working condition. I think we can all agree on that. It's not
a working condition. It would have been fair to fire them for wanting to poach Fung.
Right, what does poach mean?
I mean, I'm sorry, you're right. We got sidetracked with the poaching. It wasn't poaching. It was talking about leaving with another employee. Poaching would be taking
place for another employee.
Right,
If we get out,
let's take him with us. Yeah. That's what they were saying.
Kind of interfering with the relationship between another employee and management, basically.
Right, right.
So if that's not one of the things, if they had said to the ALJ, that's why we fired him, that would have been lawful then.
No, Your Honor. If they had said that in a vacuum, yes. But if they said that
in the context of this case, that are under consideration do not involve interfering with another employee's relationship with management, could they say that's actually, it wasn't the ULP that you're saying. It wasn't a ULP because we were actually concerned about this, the interference of our relationship with another employee. Would that be a valid defense if the only ULPs that are under consideration are spreadsheet creation?
Perhaps if they had evidence that they, separately from all this, were actively trying to talk to this guy and leave with him. But just a statement thrown out in the midst of a complaint, in the midst of protected conduct, no, that remains protected. I mean, it again, it's not protected in and of itself. It becomes protected by association.
So I guess my point is just that they might have had a different defense. Like if they had known that you were going to go in the direction of working conditions, they would want to know which working conditions are you talking about? Does it include this other employee? And then they could have made an argument. We weren't focused on the ones you're concerned about. We were focused on these ones, and it would have been lawful for us to fire these people based on this other thing. But none of this was litigated. None of this was considered because they had no idea that working conditions were a thing in this case.
Right. And then that's where I come in and say this is harmless error, because even if that was true, I would still be coming here and saying under established board law, when you just throw stuff out like that in the midst of a conversation that may not be protected in and of itself in a vacuum, it is inextricably linked.
You could know whether it's harmless or not because you don't know what their different defense would have been if they had known that working conditions were a thing. You're basically saying there's no scenario in which they could have come up with anything that possibly could have made any difference, but you don't know what they would have done differently. I'm just giving you an example of something they might have done that seems plausible to me, but there might be lots of things I don't even know about. But you're saying no matter what it was, it would have been harmless. Well, and I don't know how you can know that.
Well, they would also have to show us and to actually put forth something that they would have provided, you know, to support that they would have they would have had to provide evidence or put forth evidence that they would have provided that is somehow different than what they already put in.
It doesn't have to be different, does it? They could have changed the litigation strategy. It's the same chat that's in evidence, but they could have emphasized something different within it. They could have said something in the chat combined with the performance review that was in evidence that they didn't emphasize. I don't know. I'm just saying they could have had a different strategy.
I mean, I thought that was their strategy. They talked about Noble's performance review. They talked about, they brought all of those things in.
I think we're talking in circles at this point.
Yeah.
Do you have any more questions?
No.
Okay.
None?
Thank you very much, counsel.
Oh, may I just, the hard-coded, there is an answer to your question, Your Honor. The problem is it's a little awkward. The spreadsheet was introduced into evidence, the actual Excel spreadsheet. It was not admitted into the record. The court reporter included it inadvertently within the rest of the evidence, and it is actually part of the record that we have in the board's files. I don't want to say any more since it's not part of the formal record, but there is an answer to your question. I'm sorry.
That leaves some more questions than answers. I mean, how is the spreadsheet is Exhibit A for the unfair legal practice with regard to Vendel.
Right.
How could that not have been admitted into evidence?
They omitted to admit it. They introduced it and they didn't ask to admit it.
The company asked to admit it into evidence.
Yeah, they introduced it. They questioned him about it. And then afterwards,
the ALJ stage, the burden would be on the general counsel to prove the case, right? Wouldn't they need the spreadsheet as part of the evidence to prove the case?
The general counsel relied on photographs, screenshots that you have seen that are part of the record.
You're just talking about the original was not admitted, but screenshots.
Right. The screenshots were admitted. The original was introduced, but not admitted.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, sorry, I can't help you. Like I said, the answer exists. The truth is out there. Thank you very much. We ask that you respectfully, that's the court enforce support order in full. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Ellis, I think, did you ask for 2 minutes? Is that right?
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor. Judge Walker, to your question, the citations in the record to the evidence of how management looked at the spreadsheet and what they concluded about what Vendel had done to hard code it. I can give you the citations to that. That's the joint appendix at 1246, 841, 842, 1067, and 1053.
Thank you.
The discussions of leaving and taking Fung with us occurred before they found out that Vendel had been fired. It had nothing to do with Vendel being fired. And the discussions that were taking place in the chat at that time weren't just about salary. It was just they didn't like the restructuring for lots of reasons that they were talking about. They thought management didn't know what they were doing with the restructuring, and they objected to the restructuring, and that's why they're leaving. It wasn't just salary. So the argument that's being made here by the board's appellate counsel, even though the board didn't make this argument, is effectively, they can say whatever they want, but as long as at some point in that chat they mention salary sharing, everything automatically becomes protected.
That's his position. He said that you then have to switch to the Atlantic Steel analysis to decide something. So let's be fair to what he said.
But the implication, especially because we don't know from the board's decision are the workplace conditions that the board found to be protected. Is it the board's view that the discussion about recruiting Fung and taking him with us is a discussion of workplace conditions? We simply don't know.
All right. We don't have any further questions. I think we've definitely got your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, both counsel. The case is submitted.